Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Lust, gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, envy, and pride. According to my next guest, one of those deadly sins holds the secret to human success. Jessica Tracy is director of the Emotion and Self Lab at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada. She's now the author of Take Pride, Why the Deadliest Sin Holds the Secret to Human Success. Yes, the answer is pride. It's a good thing it wasn't sloth. And her new book explains why humans came to feel pride in both its good and bad varieties and how we can make this double-edged emotion serve us rather than the other way around. Jessica, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me.
So let's talk about your subtitle as it refers to pride as the deadliest sin. Why deadliest?
Well, I don't think I decided that. That actually is from Dante many years ago, who saw pride as the deadliest sin, yeah. And I think that's because we think of pride commonly, and this has a long religious history, of being quite problematic, of being sinful. And that's because, of course, it has this hubris component where it makes people think not just that they're great, but that they're better than everyone else around. And we found that, in fact, that is part of what pride is. There is a hubristic pride component which leads people to want to put others down in their efforts to feel good about themselves. And it leads to a whole range of other problematic antisocial behaviors like bullying and taking control.
And so Dante said deadliest, but then if we go all the way back to Aristotle, he thought pride was a virtue, right?
That's right. Yeah, there's actually a much longer mixed history of pride. Aristotle is a great example of someone who saw that pride isn't just a problematic sin, that it actually has positive qualities too. His view was that if you are great, pretending that you're not, that's actually just as problematic as thinking that you're more great than you actually are. And so he believed that a truly virtuous person, I think he said man, but I'll say person, was someone who could recognize their own greatness and acknowledge it. And that's part of pride too, that what we call authentic pride, this other component of pride, really is a genuine sense of self-worth, a sense of confidence, an ability to feel good about one's own strengths and abilities without aggrandizing and self-enhancing.
So how do we even know if we're experiencing hubristic pride or what you call authentic pride?
Well, the two experiences are pretty different feeling-wise. We found that people who feel authentic pride tend to report feelings like a sense of accomplishment, productivity, achievement, confidence, and self-worth. In contrast, people who tend to feel hubristic pride, they actually will say things like, you know, I feel arrogant, I have a sense of egotism, I feel superior and pretentious to others. Those are really distinct sets of feelings, and they're related to distinct personality profiles. Dispositionally, people who tend to feel authentic pride tend to have high self-esteem. They're well-liked by others. They're agreeable. They're nice. They like to help others, and they care about others. People who tend to feel hubristic pride dispositionally are pretty antisocial. They're often manipulative. They're Machiavellian. They try to take advantage of others toward their own ends, and they can be aggressive and pretty disagreeable.
Listeners, anybody have a pride story, good or bad? We're going to take them for the next few minutes, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You want to tell us about how pride motivated you to change for the better, or tell us about a time that pride brought you down, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or maybe you want to call in and make a case how another deadly sin is serving you well. Gluttony, anyone? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Jessica Tracy, author of Take Pride, Why the Deadliest Sin Holds the Secret to Human Success. Let's see. Tell a story about the French painter, Gauguin, who in 1885 was married and living as a stockbroker. You want to take it from there?
Yeah, absolutely. So Gauguin's a really interesting story. He's sort of famously known as someone who, as you say, he was a stockbroker. He was married. He was basically living the sort of typical bourgeoisie life outside of Paris. And he hated it. He really couldn't stand it. And so eventually what he did was he sort of traded that life in. He left his family, left behind five children, and moved to the more bohemian corners of Paris, where this art movement was becoming a big deal, and became a painter. In order to do that, he had to give up everything. He, you know, he had this luxurious home, luxurious family. He gave that all up. He ended up living in poverty on the streets of Paris, later Martinique. He famously went on, of course, to move, like I said, to Martinique, and he was suffering from a range of diseases there, including syphilis. But he basically decided, I want to live the life of a starving artist because I'm not experiencing a sense of pride in who I am as, you know, a stockbroker, that art was the way that he needed to find his real identity. And that required him to change his life around and find pride.
And you tell your own story a little bit about how after school in the late 90s, working as a barista, you were motivated by a similar need for pride.
Yeah, it was a bit different than Gauguin. but yeah, you know, I think this is something that a lot of us experience, that we're sort of getting by in a pretty comfortable way. In my case, I was working, as you say, as a barista in a cafe. I just graduated from college. I was enjoying life in San Francisco, living with a bunch of friends. But something was missing. And for me, what it was the sense of accomplishment and achievement that I'd had frequently in college. In my case, we'd put together a college magazine, a political magazine, and that was really exciting for me to just have that feeling that, you know, we'd be up all night working on it, that we're doing something important. And I think for everyone, there is that sense of, I need to feel like I'm doing something important and meaningful with my life, that we all need. And that's really the drive, the desire for authentic pride. And what I argue in the book is that that's what motivates all kinds of achievement, greatness, creativity, scientific discovery, innovation, you know, in a wide range of domains. And it often happens because people aren't getting that sense of pride. People are, you know, living life in one way or another where they might be comfortable, they might be making money, they might be doing okay, but they're not fulfilling the needs of their sort of real identity. And the desire to feel pride in who we really are is what motivates change in those cases.
All right, listeners, who has a story? I'm looking for personal stories here. I'm looking at the calls on the board, and you're all people who could write your own book with comments that start, problems begin when, or there's two kinds of pride, and don't we all have both kinds of pride at all times? I'm looking for, tell me a story about pride in your life, good, bad, or mixed. 212-433-WNYC. 433-9692. Maybe Jenny in Brooklyn has one. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, so I remember I was in ninth grade and we actually first learned the word hubris. And I remember thinking that that is how my dad would die, because our family just kind of has a lot of hubristic pride. And sure enough, last year he actually ended up, dying from hubris. He was too proud to ask for help. He was addicted to prescription drugs and ended up ending his life. And it's just weird that, you know, about 20 years later, what I had predicted would be his downfall really was his downfall. And now I can identify with that other part of the authentic pride, because like that's what I'm looking for now in my life, is like knowing that I don't want the hubristic pride to be my same downfall.
Wow, that is so heavy.
Yeah, no, I'm really sorry. That's awful, but that's a really interesting example. And I think, you know, addiction, there, it probably is linked to hubristic pride. We know addiction is linked to shame. And part of what drives hubris often is feelings of shame. It's hubristic pride is often a way that people cope with unconscious insecurities or conscious insecurities, is by saying, you know, I'm great. I'm fine. I'm good. I'm better than everyone else. I don't need anyone's
help. Just ignoring the reality.
Exactly.
Thank you for having the courage to share that story, Jenny.
Thanks so much, guys.
Valerie in Union, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, my name is Valerie. I'm from Union. And I know as a Haitian, they always talk about, like, pride or dignity. They kind of associate it together and self-respect. I know there was one incident, like, with my dad, where he was told me to do something, which was, I thought was so menial. But I did tell him I was going to do it. And because I didn't do it in that one instant, he took my car away from me for the whole summer. I had to be, like, right out of college or something like that, summer or high school. So instead of apologizing, which my friends are like, you should apologize, I decided to walk the whole summer back and forth from my summer job. And I used to get off at 12 o'clock. And I actually never apologized, to be quite honest. He eventually just gave me the car. I guess he felt bad because I was a girl. But I decided I would just wouldn't apologize because I knew I wasn't wrong. So I know sometimes I can be prideful, but and my pride is good. It can be really good, but I know it can also be an hindrance. So I try to be careful with my pride. me personally.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And I think maybe what you're kind of talking about is sort of where the border, which is, can be a fuzzy border, lies between these two kinds of pride, right? Because, you know, you really do want to maintain the authentic pride in your sense of self and the kind of person you want to be. And if for you, walking every day instead of giving in to this demand that you saw as ridiculous or inappropriate, if that was important for your identity, then I think that's great that you, you know, pushed yourself and did what you needed to do to make that happen. But of course, you know, hubristic pride is just on the other side of that border, and that's where we end up clinging to certain beliefs or values that we don't necessarily see as part of who we really are, who we really want to be, but we get tied into the sense that we need to do it.
Another great story. Valerie, thank you very much. Is there a political component to this? You know, we talk in politics about pride movements, gay pride, black pride, take your one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that those political movements that use pride really are building off authentic pride, that it's this sense of, I want to take pride in my identity. And typically in those movements, it's an identity that hasn't been able to take pride historically for various sociocultural reasons. And so it is sort of a way of saying, listen, it's not only okay to be black, gay, whatever it is, it's actually great and something that we want to feel really good about.
Peter in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
So listen, I was thinking about my own relationship. I'm separated now. I'm on my way to a divorce, so it's getting pretty messy. Regardless, what happened was my ex, she would have a thing with me where if I was feeling good about something I was doing, she would only tell me I was being grandiose, you know, that I wasn't really as big as I was. So I started taking a step back and feeling like I wasn't doing anything well. So then I was losing my sense of own personal pride. And I started feeling like, you know, maybe I'm not good enough for anything. So I started feeling like a failure. And then when it came to a point about winning a fight or who was right or wrong, I could easily say, you know, I'm wrong. I think my ex had a really hard time because she was very proud of saying, hey, I'm sorry, I took it. And if you take it to another level with the New Testament, of course, the biggest thing Jesus said before he died was, forgive those who have trespassed against me, right? So forgiveness, asking for your own forgiveness up above or wherever it is really the true path to freedom. Because before you do that, how are you ever going to forgive yourself?
Peter, thank you very much. Before we run out of time, I see you do mention Donald Trump in your book.
Yeah, he comes up a lot. And, you know, I wrote the book long before we knew that he was going to run for president, let alone win the Republican nomination. But he's a great example of hubristic pride, you know. He really – it's a rare to see someone so blatantly and explicitly grandiose about himself much of the time.
And Lance Armstrong.
Yeah, Lance is an interesting example because he's someone who I think started out with authentic pride, right? I mean, he spent his childhood and teenage years biking hours and hours every single day. And as much as, you know, biking's fun, the way that he was doing it, it couldn't have just been fun. He had to have been motivated by this ideal sense of self and really wanted to put in the work to suffer and sacrifice to become the greatest cyclist ever. That's authentic pride. But once he started winning, getting accolades, getting rewards for how well he was cycling, something shifted. And this is where hubristic pride can really be dangerous, that when we become attached to the feelings of pride that we're experiencing from our success and the praise from others, instead of the thing that we're doing to get those feelings, that's when we start looking for easier ways, basically, to get those feelings. And in Lance's case, it seemed to be cheating.
By the way, we're getting some pushback on Twitter about you using Gauguin as a positive example of pride.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
Because he's often cited as an arrogant misogynist and he abandoned his family.
Absolutely. No, and I think that's really important to know, and I do mention this in the book, that we don't necessarily want to admire the choices that Gauguin made. He made choices that were probably pretty horrible for his wife and kids, and as well as, you know, there's talk of teenage prostitutes that he became involved in, and I certainly wouldn't support that. The way that I use him in the book, though, is an example of someone who was motivated to change his life because he wasn't becoming the kind of person that he felt he needed to become. We might see that as good or bad for society, but it's something that people encounter.
My guest has been Jessica Tracy. Her new book is Take Pride, Why the Deadliest Sin Holds the Secret to Human Success. She is the director of the Emotion and Self Lab at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. We're not expecting a follow-up. Take Sloth.
It's not in the plans right now, no.
You're done with the interview now, but you can go take sloth for the next few
okay,
minutes.
Thank
good. You very much.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we will meet President Obama's Undersecretary of State for Economic Growth, Energy, and the Environment, Catherine Novelli. They have just created the first Atlantic Ocean National Monument, not that far off the coast of New York, and she's going to tell us about it. Stay with us.